I call the Committee of Economic Development meeting in order. I acknowledge that the quorum is present. We have two sets of minutes. Rep. Igo, have you had a chance to look over the minutes of January 25th?
I have, Madam Chair. I would seek to move those minutes.
All right. Well, Rep. Igo moves the minutes of January 25th. Any questions or corrections? All those in favor of adopting the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. The minutes are adopted. Rep. Feist, have you had a chance to look at the minutes on February 1st?
Yes, I have, Madam Chair, and I will move those minutes.
Rep. Feist moves the minutes of February 1st. Any questions or corrections? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries, and we adopt the minutes of February 1st. Today we have a bill, House File 189. Rep. Hansen, since you're not in the committee, I'll move your bill. Chair moves House File 189 to be referred to the Capital Investment. Welcome to the committee and present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. House File 189 relates to the 1927 American Legion Memorial Library in the city of South St. Paul. There is a new library being built in the city of South St. Paul as it's being incorporated into the county library system. So we have this historic building in the middle of town that we are trying to find a use for. I have with me today Ryan Garcia, who is the city manager for the city of South St. Paul, to provide details.
Thank you, Representative Hansen, Madam Chair, and
Welcome
committee.
To the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Yes, Ryan Garcia. I'm the city administrator for the city of South St. Paul. We thank you and acknowledge the consideration of House File 189 today. South St. Paul, as I'm sure most know, is a city with a long history. Just to provide a bit of context, our community has weathered change over the last 50 years, and we're really going through another transition here in the early 2000s. Our community is, from a demographic standpoint, has struggled with relatively slow and low growth for really the last generation overall, but we have seen the dynamics of our community change. Poverty in our community as evidenced through free and reduced lunch at our within our school system, as over 50% of our students rely on that program. Our elementary system is home to more than 40% of its population being Latino descent, and this is a change for the city of South St. Paul, a positive one, but one that has impacted sort of our perspective and ability to focus on providing community assets and preserving community assets such as the 1927 American Legion Library. So the project itself, what we're seeking assistance with, is really helping to redefine the use of this critical asset within our community. It's obviously owned by our community and beloved by our community. It's been in the city, really in the heart of town, for almost 100 years. And while grateful for the partnership of Dakota County in constructing a new public library for our residents and the residents of the broader Dakota County area to enjoy, we are left with a bit of a question as to what to do with our 1927 library. So what we're seeking assistance with, being that it's an older building and does suffer from some deferred maintenance, we are looking for assistance with assessing hazardous materials within the building, so asbestos-containing materials, lead-based paint. We are looking for an analysis of code compliance issues, that being the building code, the energy code, and of course the American with Americans with Disabilities Act compliance. In addition to those efforts, we would like to engage the community actively and proactively in determining how the community best sees the city utilizing this facility into the future. As I mentioned, currently there isn't a defined reuse for the building. We do acknowledge the history and would like to determine what what it is that the community feels we should invest in for the future of that building. And then finally, the bulk of the request is for actual engineering and architectural design of the facility for the reuse that is determined to be desired by the community. So I do thank you again for your time and for the consideration of this bill, and would be happy to answer any further questions about it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We do have an amendment, A1, and Rep. Wiener, would you like to move your amendment?
I would like to move my amendment, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Can you explain the amendment?
Yes, the amendment that I presented here would require the city to have matching funds. Looked at the project itself, loved the history, but when a project like this has some financial responsibility, it helps tie the project into the city and the requirements. The other thing that I would like to see is a report with the details about the grant at the conclusion of the study, so that some accountability. We've seen this in other committees and so forth about when the money is being spent, what is the outcome? So that my amendment does both of those things. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And unfortunately, I would encourage a no vote on the amendment. I think the accountability protections that are, this is a grant to the city of South St. Paul. They will be voting on things. There will be hearings. It's going to be on the city webpage. There's going to be clear transparency as it being with the city. In addition, there will be intangible matches that are going there. I think this is the part that we, as a poor community, do not have the funds for. You know, generally I do support matching when there's a capital project, but I don't think we've ever required match for a study, so I would oppose the amendment.
Thank you. Rep. Wiener, do you have any more questions? Any other discussion? Minority lead.
Well, I was going to say about the match. I believe there's options available. I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Still getting used to the process. I apologize.
It's all right.
I believe there's options available for the matching grants. Legacy Foundation or Legacy Fund, a few other things that would not necessarily make it on the responsibility of the city, but so the city would have a little bit of skin in the game, so to speak, although I hate that phrase, but I believe there's options out there that funds don't necessarily have to come from the city, but would have to be matched one form or another with the city's time and effort.
Thank you. Go ahead. Lead Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I understand, you know, Lakeville has a kind of a historic downtown, so I understand some of the historic issues around historic buildings. But I'm not sure that the economic development is why that's necessarily coming to our committee. Does the city have an economic development committee or council? And I think the city gets a quite handsome amount of local government aid. Why are they coming to the state to do this? And I guess maybe I'd ask staff if they're familiar with a grant like this for just a building study of what to do with a building. And he'd mentioned, you know, some structural engineering and that kind of stuff. I did hear that. Are you familiar? Have we done this in the committee in the past? Just a straight out grant, no matching funds? Because I'm not even sure we should, that I'm sold on the idea. I think the matching grant part in the amendment has some merit. But have we done this in the Economic Development Committee before?
Anna.
Chair and members, Anna Shaleen, House Research. We have funded studies for projects in the past. I can think of a couple examples. Well, I can think of one example, but it is something we have done.
And Rep. Hansen or folks from the city, whoever wants to chime on this.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you look at line 1.2, it's an act relating to capital investment, and that's where the bill's going, Representative Kosnick. So I believe it came here because in your repurposing, we may look at that as a business development or some, we're not predetermining where it goes to. But I think you know, Representative Kosnick, that the city of South St. Paul is still the only city in the state that is recognized by the U.S. Department of Commerce as economically disadvantaged. and that's because of the closure of the stockyards over 40 years ago. So we still have that designation because of some of the challenges in terms of poverty, job loss, reconstruction. So the capacity, that's why we get more LGA. We have older housing stock, less business. So we're asking for this, and I think Manager Garcia could highlight more.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kosnick, thank you for the question. We do have, the City of South St. Paul does have an economic development authority that does work very hard to identify opportunities for business growth, business development, and redevelopment in our community. As a fully built out community, we do deal with these sorts of challenges, older buildings with maybe undefined end uses that we need to consider. For some context, you know, the city obviously has gone through a couple of waves of sort of reinvention, for lack of a better word. Established in 1887, we really saw our first wave of sort of the second generation of what the city was going to be in the 1960s and 70s. And frankly, there was a significant investment at that time in public facilities such as this one, basically across the board. And today, in 2023, really we're facing a number of competing challenges for, you know, critical and core public infrastructure, water and sewer, our public works maintenance facilities, our fire stations, where this particular facility is one on a relatively long list for a small community like ours to address. At the same time, we are, you know, the city is at its own expense undertaking an effort to really define what our public service and administrative and operational needs are, and where that fits within our current regime of buildings that we have. This is one of the buildings, frankly, that we're not certain is necessarily needed for housing city functions, governmental functions. So we are, again, not predetermined, but we are keeping an eye on the opportunity to potentially see this be a public-private partnership where it could be an opportunity for small business growth or a partnership in the future. So we're really trying to make that determination through this process, really clearly define what the challenges of any reuse to this building are, but hopefully a more tailored reuse that, again, might be clearly in line with economic development function. So I hope that helped to answer the question.
Thank you. Do you have a follow-up?
Just the last follow-up, and I don't know if other members have any comments, but Chair Hansen, I did appreciate pointing out the capital investment part because that adds a little bit more scrutiny to the process. I think I haven't served on that committee, but I think they'd like additional matching funds in there. I appreciate the efforts, and I have supported the historic tax credit for older buildings to reuse. I don't know if this is something that would probably, it sounds like it maybe would fall into that category, but nonetheless, I would support the amendment and like to see where it goes through capital investment. Thank you.
Thank you. With any no more discussions on this amendment, all those in favor of adopting the A1 say aye.
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 All opposed?
No.
No.
The motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on the bill? All right. Rep. Hansen, your last words on the bill?
I'd appreciate your support, and if you want to take a tour, we'd be happy to. Just a few minutes away.
All right. Thank you. Well, the chair renews her motion that House File 189 be referred to capital investment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
The motion prevails, and the bill is okay, I'm choking on my words today. The bill is on its way to capital investment. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
The next bill on the calendar is House File 1065. Representative Hussein, welcome to the committee. I believe this is your first time in this committee. And you're also a freshman.
It is
my
first
time. So we were expecting treats today.
I mean, I wish you could have let me know so I would have brought something, you know? No one has informed me, but next time.
You know, prior to COVID, we used to we were the group that we were in 2019 when we first got here. We were the class of 2019. We were told that we have to bring treat to every new committee, and I remember buying so much Sambusa, so I was expecting Sambusa today.
But I'm blaming you and right. the rest of the team for not letting me know, but next time I'm ready.
Okay.
Madam Chair, it might be appropriate to tell the author that we're here most Wednesdays. And
There you go.
Happy to take
We're happy to take a treat every, we're here every Wednesday, right?
All right, I'll promise.
Well,
my next bill.
All right, welcome. Chair moves House File 1065 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Rep. Hussein, please explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee's members. This bill is about NDC, which is known as Neighborhood Development Center, which has been exist for many years since I was kid. For the last 30 years, which has a good track record, and it's been helping income and the minority businesses. And NDC has been managing 5 locations throughout the metro area, and also providing the skills, also providing technical, and if you have a small business, usually you do need some kind of help. And it looks like they have been given the lowest rate for 2%, and not only providing loans, but also providing technical educations and giving a lot of times throughout their timing. And NDC also expanding in greater Minnesota, Duluth, St. Cloud, Brainerd, Mille-Lacs, and lower Sioux indigenous community. And Moorhead, Minnesota. Also, not only creating businesses, also providing those business ad, bringing sales tax, which is $10.6 million for sales taxes in our state. And I'm happy to have the founder of NDC, which has been champion for money in community throughout the state of Minnesota, Mike Turman.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Tamale, and introduce yourself for the record and proceed, please.
My name is Mike Tamale. I'm the founder and now senior advisor of Neighbor Development Center. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Hussein. So Neighbor Development Center has been working for 30 years in the lowest income neighborhoods of the Twin Cities with low to very low income folks to start their own business in their own neighborhoods. And this has basically been wraparound type services, starting with training classes, since folks that want to start a business, particularly in a lot of these neighborhoods, and if they haven't had a business before, really need to start with a business plan, because the business plan is like where they get the reality check. And frankly, only about 25% of the people who start our training class end up in business, because the other 75% learn in the class that it's harder than they thought. And maybe they put it off to a different time of their life, for instance. This is an 11-week class, like one night a week kind of thing. It's out in all these different communities. They're in a small peer group of about 10 or 12 folks. And then they graduate and are ready to start, but they don't have any money. And these are, almost by definition, because we work with low to very low-income folks, they tend to not be able to get financing from a bank. So we have our own loan program. We call it character-based lending because the other C's of lending, their credit, their collateral, their sort of proven capacity tend to be pretty slim when they're just starting up like that. So we base a lot of our lending decisions on what we learned about them as a person during the class, how they stuck with it, how they did the kind of stuff that's not that fun, like learning how to do books and studying their competition, et cetera. So we do about 50 or 70 loans a year, anywhere from a couple $1,000 up to almost $500,000. We've gotten more and more into real estate lending as the business is mature. Once they're in business, we provide free technical assistance to them if they can't afford it, or if they can't afford it, we charge them for that. But this is anything from legal and accounting to branding and marketing, et cetera. And then finally, we help them get good leases. We try to get them back in their own neighborhood to really, our whole program is based on sort of building neighborhood economies from within. And so we want these folks to start the business in their own neighborhood if at all possible. So we help them with the leases, just making sure they're signing a good lease and with the build out. And we also build our own buildings to house some of these businesses. So the Midtown Global Market, the Mercado Central, Frogtown Crossroads at University and Dale, et cetera, are such places. We have about 80 businesses in our own buildings. Now we've been working around the state of Minnesota with a half a dozen communities that Representative Hussein mentioned. We're not expanding out to there. We're teaching those communities how to do what we've done if they're interested. And then we pass along some of the funds that we have received over some years from the state legislature and from a few other funders to those communities to kick off the same program in their community. We are real big on accountability and third-party evaluation. We've hired Wilder Research for most of our 30 years to do an extensive survey of hundreds of our entrepreneurs. We have about 700 in business today. And Wilder Research has come up with lots and lots of the data that we presented to you in the handout, the $10.6 million a year of sales and income tax, for instance. The average age of our businesses is 10 years, which is twice the state average. So in the ask we have in front of the state legislature now, we're asking for some more loan capital. We're asking for some operating capital. We're asking for some capital to invest in a business incubator in greater Minnesota and a project like that. And we're asking for some funds to help develop some new developers, real estate developers, in probably in the Twin Cities here. We've been working with lots of entrepreneurs that want to start building their own buildings, and we work with them, but we've never had any funding to do that. So that's the last part of our ask. If I can, I'd like to introduce Tony Gozzi now, who is one of our entrepreneurs. He's in one of our incubators up on the east side over here. It's a small contractor incubator, and Tony is the owner of Native Air Mechanical. Sir, front and center.
Welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Tony Gozzi. As Mr. Tamale mentioned, my small business is Native Air Mechanical. I am in the incubator not too far down the road on East 7th. I've been a clientele customer, graduate of the NDC class that he mentioned for over 15 years, about 15, 16 years ago, I graduated that class. And I've moved into, I actually went back to that class to help with just training and oversight of the instructors and being a realistic voice of what it takes to own a small business and run a small business in the state of Minnesota. I'm here to testify that NDC has been extremely instrumental in not only my business over the last years, and we've literally borrowed and paid back hundreds of thousands of dollars that's created hundreds of jobs and livable wage jobs, I might add. So, you know, employees that average W-2 annually, you know, $75,000 a year. So they've been instrumental. They've been there when nobody else has, as far as the borrowing, the funds to help with purchasing of equipment and materials on projects, all the way back to the first time we were on the Hmong Academy project next to the state fairgrounds there. They've helped out not only our business, but, you know, as you mentioned, hundreds of others that are boots on the ground that are providing jobs and making a real difference in a lot of people's lives in a positive way. So at the end of the day, I'd ask you to look at the bill and pass it forward, because it makes a big difference for a lot of people.
Thank you very much. Any discussion on the bill? Rep. Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to, it's a comment. I really love this bill. Thank you, Representative Hussein, for bringing this forward. I just want to highlight one particular part of this bill that I really, really like, and that's the $2 million for the high-risk character-based loans for non-recourse loans that are used to leverage for $10 million in recourse lending. So this is 1.19, 1.20 on the bill. I like it for a couple of reasons. One is this allows this particular moving money around to get more capital is something that high net worth individuals in our society are able to use all the time, and most small business owners just have no recourse for this. So being able to fund capital to get more capital for this, I think, is wonderful. Secondly, just kind of define some of those terms, the non-recourse loans. What that means is that lenders can't come after small businesses that fail for everything that they own, for their homes, for whatever else, which I think is wonderful. We say all the time that every small business is an act of hope, and sometimes hope doesn't work out, but those individuals shouldn't be punished for the rest of their lives for this. So I love this bill, gladly will support it, just wanted to thank you, and I'll be talking to you afterwards about maybe getting NDC to come down to Rochester. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Representative Feist. Thank you, Madam Chair. I also just wanted to share my support for this bill. I'm a proud co-author, and I wanted to lift up one of the less sexy parts of it, but that really means a lot to me, which is the technical assistance in Greater Minnesota. I was just thinking back to when I started my own law firm, that my law partner knew how to register with the Secretary of State. He knew how to set up our malpractice insurance. He does our books to this day. And that allowed me, because I had the capital, I've shared in this committee, like help from my dad, and the social capital, you know, having a law partner who had that expertise and ability, it allowed me to be a success. And so I think the providing this type of technical assistance for people who don't have that, the literal capital or social capital, I think is really important. So I think this overall is a really great bill, and I, in particular, am excited about that aspect of it. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Perryman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have one question, basically. I really love the program. I live in St. Cloud, so I know it can really be impactful with the St. Cloud area as well. But over the, you have got funding anywhere from $650,000 to $750,000. This is quite a larger request. So I'm just asking, since it is a higher significantly higher request, how do you think you will monitor, you know, oversee it and the projects, how you will determine the projects, oversee the money, since it is quite larger?
Mike Molly.
So, Madam Chair and Representative Perryman, you noticed, yeah, it's up, 10 times? So, yes, it is. So first of all, I mean, the core funding we've received in the past has been, like you said, either 650 or 750 a year, and so that part increased just to 800. So that was, you know, that's kind of our regular program, and it does keep increasing the demand for this in the Twin Cities. The Greater Minnesota work, we've had 150,000 a year. Well, it's over a biennium, so it's 150 over a two-year period. We've had that, I think, three times already, and the bulk of that we pass through to these communities to start their own program. And we also are training them, and we provide the materials. So they basically, it's like plug and play kind of, if they are interested, and they learn how to do it themselves, and we give them some starting capital from that 150. The incubator project in Greater Minnesota, we don't have a project yet for that. We have all these different partners. They're all interested in doing something like this, but if we got this, we'd have to do some significant training of them. Real estate is hard, and it's not for every organization, so we'd have to be careful on how to do that. We do our own real estate development, so we know how hard it is. $2 million of loan capital, that's basically added to the loan capital that we have and that we've been using. We have a loan staff of, I think, six people. We have a loan committee. And we've been running that, you know, we have lent $30 million over the years. The leverage that was spoken about earlier, that comes usually from loans that we can get from foundations, program-related investments, for which we put this $2 million into a loan loss reserve. And that's how we leverage the $10 million. It becomes a 20% loan loss reserve for us as we're making these sort of high-touch, high-risk loans. But our historic write-off is down around 2 or 3%. So it's a real, it's a healthy reserve. But we are responsible for those loans, the foundations. So we have to cover our back too. And then the final one on the $3 million for the emerging entrepreneur or the emerging developer fund, that would be basically extending an existing body of work we've had for years. And the bulk of that is loans again. And we've been, we're a community development financial institution. We've been that for our whole history. So it's a U.S. Treasury Department funded and designated classification. And so we have a very strong and robust sort of lending program, portfolio management, loan committee oversight, board oversight, auditor oversight, et cetera. So I think we're, I mean, it extends our ability to do things we've been doing all along, I guess I'd say, but just with more capital.
Thank you. Okay. Representative Weiner, you had a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe that the question I had was basically on reporting and oversight. Again, I was concerned. And the incubator that was mentioned, if there was a location. So both of the questions, concerns I had were answered.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for coming to share today both your experience as a business owner and participant in this program, and then just some of the wonderful work that NDC has done in Minnesota and all around the state. I'm particularly excited about the Greater Minnesota Development. So while I represent the suburbs here, I'm a property owner in Otter Tail County, and I have extended family in the Wadena Deer Creek area. I don't know if many of you know, but the downtown Wadena area is experiencing a bit of a renaissance. So if you like, I'm going to shout out to Drastic Measures Brewing in particular. It's one of my favorite outstate breweries, but I digress. Really excited about this because we know that particularly throughout COVID, with the opportunity to work remotely, lots of folks want a little bit of that downtown, small town living, and people are able to find it in so many parts of Minnesota. So I want to make sure that we're looking at that expansion. I think the technical assistance is really important. That's something that you guys have done before. Looking at incubator development. Representative Smith mentioned Rochester, but I think, I mean, a lot of this, just making sure that entrepreneurial minds all across the state of Minnesota are getting the support that they need, and I'm really excited about that part. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Keselowski.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to our testifiers and Representative Hussein for bringing this forward. I also want to specifically say miigwech to our testifier, Tony. I think you are exactly what it is, and we're talking about how we're rebuilding and reclaiming our generational wealth and health, and how that's going to lift up our families and our community and our economy. So I want to say thank you for being here. I'm really excited about this bill and the work that you are doing and the opportunity to continue to make further robust investments. In Greater Minnesota and Duluth, we have benefited greatly from the partnership and your sharing this model with our community. We've seen within our program serving any population, but especially our Black, Brown, and Indigenous folks, and especially our youth. We have programs that help introduce youth to entrepreneurial opportunities from a young age, and that's very good to be able to start showing our people that we can be doctors and lawyers, and we can go to into 2 and 4 year apprenticeship programs, and we can also be entrepreneurs. And hey, sometimes we do it all at the same time. I also want to say specifically about the technical assistance, how important that is. Also, just jumping off of what's been shared, we know the lots of barriers into the finances, but there's also just simple things of like, how do I create a website, and what type of a business should I file for? Also, childcare and cultural supports. And I've seen in our community how that's been used to, folks are single parents, or they've got multiple kids, or they're taking care of cousins and whatnot. And so that's really crucial to be able to have those wraparound supports. And in my community in Grenier, Minnesota, we see a lot of our businesses of color are actually operating out of their homes or out of their car online. And so I'm especially curious about the incubator space. That's one of the things we hear over and over and over again, that that lack of ability to be able to get into our own space, but then have the capital to be able to make it our own. So I'm just curious if you could talk to us a bit about that concentrated and affordable commercial space. What will the lease and rates look like for entrepreneurs who are interested in taking their business, you know, in out of their homes and into the storefront?
Mike Tamale, do you want to take that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the chairs are blocking your sign, so I didn't catch.
Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you, Representative Kozlowski. So we have sort of two basic components of the real estate side of our model. And the one I mentioned earlier, which is helping people lease good spaces that are good for their business under a good lease. And then getting assistance on all the many things you have to do to build that space out and to open the business, because you might be good at baking or hair or cars or whatever it is, but it generally doesn't make you good at navigating city red tape, architects, contractors, and dealing with the law in so many different ways. And so that's probably the bulk of what we're helping our 700 entrepreneurs with year after year, and then financing those tenant improvements, because financing tenant improvements is hard because you're basically fixing up somebody else's building for your business. But you might have a three-year lease, so who's going to give you financing to do that? On the incubator side of things, these are projects that we've built ourselves or that we've partnered with other groups to build. And the whole idea there is what we call long-term affordable commercial spaces that are going to be places where these entrepreneurs can be successful to start their business and to grow their business. And the rates are basically consistent with what's the square footage rate in that exact area for older buildings, even though we've either built new buildings or fixed up buildings. So we have to bring in grant money and, you know, foundation money, donations from individuals up front to bring the cost way down, so that a coffee shop or a hair salon can actually pay the rent. So in terms of in ours, you know, we work here in the Twin Cities, anywhere from $10 to $20 a square foot on an annual basis is kind of the range of base rent, and we typically don't charge a CAM. So anybody who knows real estate knows that that's pretty affordable. We have been working in your town of Duluth with Family Freedom Center, and they have an incubator idea on their mind. I'm going to hear about this next week, so we'll see. I'm always cautious because real estate development causes major brain damage for anybody who doesn't, and organizational stress. So like I said earlier, you have to be set up properly to take this on, and you can work with partners, you can work with private sector partners, public sector partners, nonprofits, whatever. So there's lots of different ways to do this. And our thing in Greater Minnesota is always about training communities to do this same type of work, not us. We're never the ones out there training or lending entrepreneurs individually. It's building little ecosystems in each of these places to do the same kind of work.
Do you have a follow-up question? Or?
Yeah, just to say thank you for that. That's exactly what we've seen in, you know, communities who may are entrepreneurs who end up folding because of all of those, not having that robust support. So I look forward to the added capacity and, to your point, of the ecosystem, being able to work with our city and our business chambers and our business councils, and bringing all of those resources together is really, I think, the key to making this successful across our community. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Lead Kosnick.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And I know we have another bill after this, but I think we have plenty of time.
Okay.
Appreciate the work.
Going to ask tons of questions.
No.
Yeah.
No, my point is I appreciate the work that NDC has been doing, and Mr. Tamale, his work in the communities and his commitment to this over a long time. I've known you for a few years in sessions. One thing, I'd like to get his insight a little bit, because I think we do have time, on the economic outlook and how that will, what your thoughts are, what you're seeing coming down the road for the broader economy, and how that relates to some of the businesses that you help with as a committee. We haven't talked a lot about that. But then also, Madam Chair, he had mentioned the Wilder Research study that they did, and just a friendly suggestion that maybe a presentation at one of our future committee hearings. I'd be curious to see what they came up with and kind of help us understand some of that stuff. But if we have time, I'd love to hear, take advantage of his expertise and just some brief comments on the economic outlook.
Okay. Mr. Tamale?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Kozlik. Well, first of all, I'm not an economist. And second of all, I tend to work with entrepreneurs as individual people, and I put, you know, our whole model is basically focused on each of them as a strong person with lots of potential. And in a weird way, we don't, at least I guess there's probably have other folks on our staff that are way smarter at this than I am, but if someone's a real entrepreneur, we're going to do everything we can to help them, whether there's already 10 barbers on that street and they want to do a barbershop. We're going to find out why they think they can make it. We're going to watch them, you know, month after month as they're getting ready. We might try to talk them into going to a different street in this little example. But at the end of the day, you know, you can be on a rising trend and a lousy entrepreneur and you're not going to make it. And you can be in a tough, you know, niche of the market or the economy, and just by creativity and persistence, you can make it. So that's a little bit sidestepping your question, and I apologize for that, but that's a lot of how we go about this. That said, we're not oblivious to trends. Another thought that crosses my mind is that when the general economy gets tough, we get busier. The demand goes up, people get laid off. People that weren't low income like 2 months ago now are, so they fit our program. And it's amazing what percentage of the population has a little business idea in the back of their mind. I mean, you can talk to almost anybody and they've thought about, you know, starting something at some point in their life. And if you get laid off, if you're gonna do an early retirement or whatever it may be, people, you know, come to us at really interesting times in their life. So I'd say in general, focusing more and more attention, like your committee does, by the state, by the private sector, by the nonprofit sector, on these small, on the small business sector in general. I mean, if you look at how the deed budget and even the recent federal dollars that came through SSBIC, four of those six programs are really oriented at tech and high growth and bigger businesses, which is fine. They're huge impact also. But I guess our opinion is we could spend more, a higher percentage of our attention and resources on these smaller businesses, and then the entrepreneurs sort of tell us where they think there's an opportunity, and it's very much a crawl before you walk, walk before you run process. So that's different than how an economist would answer your question, obviously. But our businesses are on average in business for 10 years. As I mentioned earlier, that's Wilder Research Evaluation. So they're doing something right once they actually take the plunge. And we see this in Greater Minnesota just as much as in Frogtown or the East Side, without a doubt. I think what we've been out preaching is getting more communities building these ecosystems that can do this wraparound type services. Because if you just have a loan fund for these startups, for these higher risk, higher touch businesses, just loan capital by itself doesn't work. But just training folks without loan capital, that doesn't work either. You need the both of them, and you need the longer term hand holding. So that's why these sort of ongoing ecosystems is what we're committed to building out in any community that's interested in that.
You have a follow-up?
No, thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate the intent of the bill.
All right. We have one more question. Representative Smith?
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kosnick convinced me that I could ask more questions because we have time. So. I'm just curious, so we know from SBA data that nationwide the last 2 years have seen a huge rise in new businesses being formed. Obviously, a lot of that is related to pandemic and single entity and a lot of other things. But I'm curious, if have you seen that reflected in the last 2 years, specifically in your organization, in whether it's here or in greater Minnesota?
Mr. Tamale, sorry.
Madam Chair and Representative Smith, so you're asking if we've seen a rise in the number of folks trying to start businesses?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Absolutely.
That's the question.
I'm trying to get better at this.
You're doing good, so.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we kind of keep expanding. But we're also, we study our own failures closely, and we study folks that get into business and fail. And we study folks that don't, you know, that take our class and then don't go into business, because each of those are, they're informative. We don't treat failure as a negative for an entrepreneur, although it's traumatic for them and their families. But man, do they learn a lot. And if they are ready to start start again, we're all in with that. And we do the same with our own program. So we've started a program recently called Block, which is for Black and Latina women. That's a peer group where they've come through the class, they've mostly launched their businesses, but it's an ongoing support group just for that demographic and those, I think it's like, I don't know, 15 or 20 women. It's an amazing scene to sit and watch how strong they are together and how much they value that. So, you know, that's one example. We've done a lot with the technology for the small businesses to get POS systems going, to get websites going, to get branding going. To get social media driving businesses their way. So obviously COVID accelerated the shift away from brick and mortar. So that's sort of fundamentally a challenge for every town in Minnesota and for every street in the Twin Cities here. But it's also an opportunity for every single business to have a whole new way of getting customers. And, you know, the older entrepreneurs a lot of times are intimidated by that type of sort of online side of their business, but a lot of them have kids, and those kids know all about it. And so we'll work with both generations and help them drive new sales and bring in new customers in that fashion. Those are just a couple examples, I guess.
Do you have a follow-up?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Well, I'll add my two cents before we give Representative Hussein his final comments. Both the Global Midtown and Mercado Central are in my district, and I have seen the work of NDC work with, you know, small businesses. I remember when the pandemic hit and everything went online, one of the biggest problems was trying to work with the small business owners who don't have, you know, they don't have accountants, they don't have lawyers, and they don't know how to use a computer, or they have never used a computer, or they don't own one, trying to get documents scanned online and applying loans and grants online. And I have seen NDC step up. That's why I'm super excited about the technical assistance, because that was the work that they did. It was to help some of those businesses find an individual in their office, helps, you know, a business owner who has all their documents in paper and don't know how to scan any of it or apply any of the grants or the loans that were, you know, always time sensitive, and if you miss the deadline, you don't get a chance to redo. So thank you for all the work that you have done. I'm very appreciative of you and your staff and your entity, and I'm excited that you guys are expanding it to greater Minnesota as well. Representative Hussein, last words on your bill.
thank you, Madam Chair, and my colleagues for accepting this great organization who has been doing a great work throughout Minnesota and now trying to expand it in the greater Minnesota. I'm really excited about that. Also, I wanted to thank NDC for providing the skills and giving 11 million grand during the time of the COVID, the difficult times that we've been seeing for many small businesses, where we're able to step up and help for our community. And I wanted to thank, there's 700 existing NDC businesses, and I would like to see more opportunity across the state. And we always talk about equity and economic disparities. This is the right organization that will be stepping up and to provide for a small business. And I want to thank you all for giving us the opportunity to hear about this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. I renew my motion that House File 1065 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you. Our next bill is House File 752. We'll bring you back for a presentation of that study sometime. Representative Finke, welcome to the committee. I move that House File 752 will be referred to the Capital Investment. Please explain your bill.
Thank you, Chair Hassan, for this opportunity to come and hear 752 and to the members of the committee for your consideration. HF 752 is a $3 million appropriation from the general fund for an organization called Film North. Film North is a local filmmaking organization that seeks to tell stories of all of our residents of Minnesota. The project that we're talking about today is a $12 million private-public partnership with 60% of the total funds already raised. This investment will allow Film North to move forward in so many ways. It is based in the rehabilitation of a historic building in University Avenue in my district. But it will also allow them to grow their filmmaking lab for inclusive and socially responsible filmmaking. Some of you may know that I'm a filmmaker. Before my time here, I was a documentary filmmaker. I own a production company. I'm a small business owner, and I believe very deeply in the powerful, virtuous nature of telling stories. I believe that stories are what allows us to live together and to find peace together and understand and build empathy about our world. And any endeavor that we can do to increase that work needs to be supported, and especially in these moments. So there's great many details about this. There's a lot of jobs that this will create. There's a lot of economic support. There's partnerships. But for that material, I am going to turn it over to Andrew Peterson, who I have with me here today, Executive Director at Film North.
Welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you. I'm Andrew Peterson. I'm the executive director of Film North. I want to thank you, Representative Finke, all the co-authors of this bill, Madam Chair, and the committee for the opportunity to share a little bit about what we do. Film North was founded in 1987. It's the largest filmmaker service organization in the Upper West, Midwest, and one of the largest and most successful in the country. We provide education and professional development for media artists and all artists who in all disciplines that incorporate media into their work. Based in St. Paul, we actually serve artists throughout the entire state and region. We do this through after-school programs, continuing education, summer camps, seminars, workshops, and panels, and professional development programs that train media artists to enter this $192 billion industry and enter the creative economy in Minnesota. In our youth programs, 70% are kids of color, 90% qualify for free or reduced lunch. Every kid that walks through the door, we tell them that they have a voice and that their stories matter. Many of you may not know that artists living and working in Minnesota, many of them are creating the films and television shows you're probably watching, all from their desks and homes and offices in Minnesota, from Amazon and Netflix, Hulu and Apple TV and major networks. Michael Starry is a great example. I started 10 years ago. He didn't have a credit to his name, and in 2019 was nominated for an Emmy for the Netflix series When They See Us. With some of the most exciting work that's happening right now is within our indigenous communities. Lyle Mitchell-Corvine, Missy Hale, Leah Hale, Missy Whiteman, and Rihanna Yazzie are all creating just spectacular work that you'll see on TPT at Sundance Film Festival. Lyle Corvine was just in Sundance last year and nominated for 4 Independent Spirit Awards for his work. You'll be seeing and hearing much more about them. And they represent the diversity in front of and behind the camera that Film North really champions and looks to move forward. Our new home we will anchor a 24,000 square foot center that will also have an outdoor green space. It's designed for the community with the community in mind, what the community needs and bringing community together around stories and storytelling. Cinemas, indoor and outdoor, are designed to support long-term partners that are BIPOC-led film festivals, Arab American, Hmong, Indigenous, and screening series in the footsteps of Gordon Parks are all people we've worked with before. This provides a St. Paul home and a permanent home where audiences can find them and they can expand their programming to year-round, not just for the 4 or 5 days of their festivals. As outlined by Representative Ficky, our project it's going to create jobs, about 46 jobs we estimate in the near term. They're all in the creative economy and education. We employ a lot of instructors as well. There's as over 60% of this is raised. I would like to introduce on our team Bethany Gladhill, who's an integral partner in this with me, and our business director at Film North.
Welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Bethany Gladhill. I've been the business director of Film North, came in at the same time as Andrew in interim leadership, and over 10 years later, we're still here helping this organization grow and reach some new exciting areas. The project for me has been especially exciting because my background is not only in nonprofit arts administration, but also in historic preservation. So the work on an adaptive use of this historic building, a Clarence Johnson designed warehouse, which is not usual. Usually you're looking at large houses on Summit Avenue or the University of Minnesota. But to take this building that was built as a warehouse, built for that community and as a showroom, and make this into a creative center, I think really demonstrates this area, this part of the community, and what we can showcase in the future. We're excited to be in this building. We're bringing in our partners who are DNO architects and other creative enterprises. We've got Orion Corporation, which is social services, that will be coming in, and some other lease elements. We're really excited to have this be a destination and someplace that we can bring in partners and continue to go out throughout the state.
Thank you. We have an amendment, A1 amendment. Rep. Wiener, please move your amendment and explain.
I'd like to move my amendment A1 forward, Madam Chair.
All right. Would you explain what the amendment does?
Once again, this amendment would set some timelines, guidelines. Firm believer in having some completion dates and so forth. And when we're working on projects, we always want to see things focused and moving forward. The other thing is, once again, status reports, you know, at the completion. How do we gauge our success and failures if we're not getting the information back in order to observe and learn from these projects? So once again, that would be my amendments.
Thank you, Representative Pinky.
Thank you, Chair Hassan and Representative, for your amendment. This bill is moving forward to the Capital Investment Committee, where it feels like this is an amendment that maybe should live there. I do know that we have some reporting requirements involved, and I understand exactly what the heart of this is, but I would ask that we bring it to Capital Investment before we start amending it.
Thank you. Any other discussion on the amendment?
I do, actually. If it goes,
go ahead.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. If it goes through Capital Investment, does the reports and stuff still come through? And how would we know that would be added on at that time?
Representative Finke.
It would be up to someone in Capital Investment to provide an amendment, I believe.
All right.
Madam Chair. What we could speak to in this what we could speak to in this process is that part of our funding is through new market tax credits for this area and historic tax credits. We're one of the last projects approved last year. We do have both robust funding from that and requirements in terms of completion dates and in terms of reporting from that. We would be happy to share that with members of this body or anyone else. That would be a very public process.
And I'm also told that Dee does reporting, and we're sent that report, so this will be included in that reporting. I'm new here, so I'm just passing the information that was passed to me. So we do get reporting on all of these projects.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That does help a little bit, but, you know, we've talked about this in other committees as well, even looking at bills retroactively to make sure that the money, the taxpayers' money that we're spending is being spent effectively and usefully. So that's always my concern. We hold the responsibility of the taxpayers, you know, and these reports are actually for a person like me who is new as well, and I can look back and say, okay, this is what happened on a project in the past, moving forward, because, you know, I might not be here the next term, who knows. So this would be the opportunity for the next representative to look at those reports and say, this was successful, this wasn't, and this is the reason why. And I think that reporting is important, and I believe it should be added onto this this bill.
Thank you, Representative Wiener. We all care about accountability here, and we want to make sure that we are doing the right thing. And this bill has another stop. So it's going to capital investment, and I'm sure someone else in the capital investment will have the same questions that you have and raise them there. It's the first stop is here, but it's going to another committee, and I have another member in the list who wants to have a comment on this or a question. Representative Katisa Watun.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess my question to the amendment is, and maybe to either House Research or House Fiscal, the text on line 1.3 that this project is considered abandoned, and I appreciate the definition of material progress, but I'm not super familiar with like seeing language that says like this project is considered abandoned in a 6 month time period. I'm just curious, like is that typical with you know organizations that come to us for an appropriation that language? I mean, is that a common language or a common requirement that we then retract that appropriation for? Like for that 6 month time period, it just seems really soon, and I'm more familiar with seeing like you know the this funding is available until XYZ date. So I'm just curious if that's
Ms. Anna,
Anna Schilling House Research. This is not common language in the economic development area. Project funding being available to abandon is quite common in the capital investment bonding area when you're doing capital projects. The six-month term for county as being abandoned is not something I have seen before. It may be something that has been seen, though not as commonly, in capital investment.
Thank you. You have a follow-up?
Yeah, just really quick. I appreciate that. And I've never served on the Capital Investment Committee, but been on workforce and economic development previously. So I want to make sure. I mean, things can take time, and I think I don't want to be pulling the funding out from underneath a really good project should we decide to move forward with it, or should the Capital Investment Committee decide to move forward with it before they're able to get things off the ground. So I would oppose the amendment for that reason.
Thank you. Representative Finke, do you have a
comment? Yeah, I would just like to point out that, you know, I definitely understand that we need to be good stewards of this money. I believe deeply in accountability and financial responsibility and understanding what we're doing with our money. I also believe that this is the process under which we do this, and which we find ourselves being asked, is this a project that we believe this money is worthy of? And I will also just say that this is a project that is shovel ready, it's ready to go. It is a small portion of the overall funding for this project, most of which has already been raised. So I know that's not going to satisfy the question, right? We need the reports, we need the follow-up, but it does sound like that follow-up also will be coming as a part of the existing deed reporting.
Thank you. All those in favor of adopting the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. I voted wrong. So sorry.
Just a voice.
Chair votes. Opposed, please say nay.
Nay.
Nay. All right, the motion doesn't carry and the amendment is not adopted. Discussion on the bill. Representative Feist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Big picture comment. I love this bill. I'm an artist in my own way, the writing and drawing, and so I just love supporting the arts here in the legislature. I have a super wonky question for you. I have been tasked with sort of thinking about free and reduced lunch forms and where they pop up in a lot of contexts, because as we move forward with free meals for all students, those free and reduced lunch forms are going to become less important. And they already have in the school setting because they've been replaced with the Medicaid direct certification. So I was curious, when you have those counts, do you use the free and reduced lunch counts in other contexts when you're applying for grants? And do you have thoughts on other metrics that you could look to when you're looking at the demographics of the children that you work with in your program?
Bethany may be able to, oh, sorry. I'm new to this too.
Go ahead, Mr. Peterson.
Thank you. Right. Thank you, Madam Chair. With our grant reporting, we are often given the metrics to use, and we respond with them. While I agree with you, I don't think it's a perfect way to account for it. It's what we've been. It's our requirement that we operate under.
Do you have a follow up? Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. So those grants would be from like any variety of organizations that you see funding from?
Whatever. State Arts Board and also private foundations and some individuals as well.
Interesting.
Cool.
Thank you.
Representative Sean. Thank you, Madam Chair. So I sit on the Capital Investment Committee, and I'm working on a project that's similar to what you guys are doing. The Funding Asian Women Collective Group, and they're seeking to construct a theater facility for them, but they were a private entity, and now they're working under C3, and they have a fiscal sponsor. I'm just curious, are you guys a private entity or C3?
We're 501c3.
Go through the chair, sorry.
Sorry, I keep forgetting.
So horrible. All right, Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, sorry. We're 501c3, and we work very, very closely with that organization. Naomi Coe is a past grantee of ours and is a lead artist in that. We need more organizations. We need more facilities. Phil North is a leader, and we partner with everyone here. So it's like we're excited about that project.
Rob Shang, do you have a follow up?
No, thank you, Madam Chair. I just asked because we're actually going through some hurdles, and I want to get them some funding too. So. I appreciate knowing where you guys are. Maybe I might even want to have a follow-up conversation with you guys.
Happy to.
On how we can help get them some funding, too. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Up next, we have Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I love this. I love film. My question from an economic perspective is, you talked a lot in your presentation about artists accessing this area, but you also did mention a cinema, and so I kind of wanted to just nail down and ask specifically some questions about how accessible that you mentioned programming potentially year round. Has there been any thought on, I'm just thinking if you're getting state funds, making sure ticket prices are affordable for these and potentially, free for certain parties so that they can access the art, not just the artists who make them. So I'm curious if that has been a consideration at all.
Mr. Peterson.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Smith. Most of our programs are free, and we design them to be accessible. We also have low-income pricing structures for our classes, as well as a scholarship, a generous or underwritten scholarship program. Accessibility and removing barriers is a core principle for us and is something that when everybody has a story to tell, everybody needs access to the means by which they can learn and create. So that accessibility is baked into us.
You have a follow-up, Mr.
Representative Smith? Yeah, just maybe one quick follow-up, Madam Chair. So is your programming films that are only made through the Film North and through this area, or are you, distributing other things from around the world or other parts of the state?
Mr. Peterson?
Thanks. We're called Film North to represent that the Dakotas, Iowa, and Western Wisconsin in particular don't have a resource, and we find that we have a limited number of people that will then naturally come to us for advice. Anybody who is, for instance, based in another state but making a film about a topic in Minnesota or something that involves Minnesota issues or people, often we work with. We have a fiscal sponsorship program which allows us to work really closely and dig into their financials and their business plans and help and their marketing and other aspects of their projects. But the core group that we work with are Minnesota artists and throughout the state. We do we have work everywhere, Duluth, St. Cloud, and Rochester are our core, and also the Fargo-Moorhead area are core areas where we do regular programming and engage with artists there. Many of our artists are also small business owners and independent contractors, so we do a lot of advice as well, not just about the creation of art, but the creation of art businesses.
Thank you. Vice Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative. Thank you for bringing this forward. I have said since I started coming into this body and doing this work that storytelling changes the world. So I just want to tell you thank you for amplifying the voices of Minnesotans and making sure that the stories of our people here of diverse backgrounds are heard. So thank you.
Thank you. With no further discussion, Representative Finke, you have the last word.
Mm.
Thank you, Chair Hassan and members, for your questions and support. There's not much left to say. We have a very vibrant filmmaking industry in the Twin Cities. A lot of people don't realize just how vibrant and alive it is. This is a really exciting project. The prospect of an outdoor cinema in my district is very exciting to me. There's a lot of potential for how this could help the community, and I'm grateful for your support.
Thank you. I will renew my motion that House File 752 be referred to the Capital Investment Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
No.
Motion carries, and congratulations. You are on your way to Capital Investment Committee. With no final business, we are adjourned.